We are going to be in several places this morning, but we're going to start in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 9. That one's a sneaky one to find, right after Ephesians and before Timothy. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And I'm going to start in verse 9. All right, did everybody get a little stapled shut piece of paper? That's always a silly question. Did anyone not get a stapled shut piece of paper? That's more useful. All right. Let's read together. 1 Thessalonians 4, 9 and 10. Now, as to the love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you. For you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed you do practice it toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, to excel still more, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you, so that you will behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need. Let's pray before we go any further. Father, thank you for giving us this family, this local church, and your families all over the world. One family, many locations. And I pray that as we study this morning, you will help us to see how to excel still more in loving one another, and then to do it, to follow your direction and obey your commands, and see what you will do among us. Amen. So what I want to share with you this morning has to do with this phrase in 1 Thessalonians 9 and 10. Talking about the love of the brethren. And I love the way he writes them. He says, "Now I don't need to talk to you about the love of the brethren. But I'm going to anyway." He says, "Now as to the love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another." And I think that's true for us. We all know this basic command that within the body, we are to love one another. But look at what he says next in verse 10. "Indeed, you do practice it," that is, loving one another, "toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia," which is where Thessalonians was. "But we urge you, brethren, to excel still more." Now, when we think about excelling, we think about going beyond, above and beyond. And what he's saying to them is, "I love it how you love one another. You are doing great, and I want you to do even greater. I want you to excel still more." He's not writing them because they don't have any love for one another. He's writing them because he wants to see that go to a whole nother level. And that's kind of my heart and what I have to share with you this morning. I love the love that we have in this church for one another and the family spirit that we have. And yet, what if we could go to a whole other level of loving one another and excel still more? So what I want to talk to you about this morning is a way of loving our brothers and sisters in Christ that is little practiced today. But it is something that is commanded by God in the inspired writings of Peter, Paul, John, and whoever it was that wrote the book of Hebrews. God commands it. Three different gospels record Jesus teaching his disciples to depend on this thing that I haven't told you what it is yet. This thing was what they were to depend on when they did missions. And indeed, it was a critical part of the missionary work of both Paul and Peter. In fact, it's safe to say the early church could not have functioned without this practice. And yet, the church in America largely does. The writer of Hebrews warned us not to neglect this thing, but we've neglected it. And as a consequence, this thing that was so critical to the church is something that many people in the American church have experienced only a few times in their life, or maybe never. It is something that some of you have possibly never experienced, even in this church. And yet, this thing is something that used to be so common, so distinctive, so identifying a mark of believers that one historian has called it the birthmark of the early church. Paul urged us to pursue this thing, to seek after it, to make it happen. It's so important that in order to become an elder, to be qualified, you had to show that you had made a habit of doing this, of showing love to the brethren in this way that's so rare today. In the ancient church, according to Paul writing to Timothy, a widow couldn't be put on the list of widows that the church was going to support unless she had made a lifestyle of loving the brethren in this particular way. I believe that this practice that I want to talk to you about today is 100 times more welcoming than a handshake or a hug, and about 100 times less common. It's something that will cost you to give, but something every family in this church can afford. Have you ever felt like you see the same people week after week in church and you never really get that close to them? You know their name, you know their face, maybe you talk to them, maybe they're not the people in your quadrant of the church that you're likely to be talking to. But this can go on for years. Have you ever struggled to be truly sincere? I mean, we know the stereotype is everybody puts on their smile and comes to church. But what if you don't want to do that? What if you really want to be yourself, and yet you find it really difficult to be yourself, or for people to know who you really are in a church setting? I think that this thing I'm talking about addresses both of those problems. And not only those two, have you ever noticed, and this is something that just, I've just seen it so often over the years, that a family or an individual will come to church, and maybe they attend several times, maybe they even join the church, and then slowly, almost imperceptibly, they just kind of fade away and disappear. I think this thing that I'm going to talk about this morning addresses that problem as well. I believe that if every family in the church obeyed this command from God through Peter and Paul and John, even just once a month, that we would all have a closeness, a gladness, a sincerity of friendship that is at a whole nother level from what we experience today, which is good today, but I think it could excel still more. So what is it? Some of you may be afraid of what it is. Most of you perhaps have already figured it out, but open up your sheet of paper, and we're going to talk about a thing called hospitality. It's like Christmas. Tearing of paper. All right. All those things I just said come from the Word of God. I wanted you to think about them without having the Word of God to look at, because if you put them all together, they sound a little exaggerated, perhaps. Like, how could something be such a big deal and yet such a small deal to us? And what even is hospitality? So I gave you a verse sheet because we're going to look at quite a few verses, because the New Testament, well, the Old Testament as well, but we're going to focus on the New Testament, talks about this in so many different places. But we're going to start with Romans chapter 12, verses 10 through 13. The topic sentence for this paragraph, or in Paul's case, sentence, is this: be devoted to one another in brotherly love. That's the command. And then he said, here's how you do it. Give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Practicing hospitality. I'm going to look at those two words. First, hospitality. What is it? Well, it's kind of what you think it is. It literally means, the Greek word that's used here means love of strangers. Now, he's not talking about strangers in this passage. He's talking about being devoted to one another in brotherly love. And the word hospitality, even though it literally means love of strangers, it really just means love of somebody outside of your home. And specifically, loving them into your home. It's, in its simplest form, it just means sharing your home with someone as a guest. Especially in the New and the Old Testament, in at least almost every instance, it means sharing a meal with someone in your home. Someone outside your immediate family. That's it. That's what hospitality is. So as we go through all these verses, it's not something complex or challenging to understand. It's just sitting down with someone at your table and sharing a meal together. That's the primary and simplest form of hospitality. Sometimes it extended, and still does today, to actually hosting someone in your home, and that they would stay with you, sometimes for days, in case of Paul and Peter and many others. But at least it means sharing a meal together. So what is it that Peter says? He says, practice hospitality. That word practice, it doesn't really get to the meaning here. In other places, the same word is translated pursue or seek after. 1 Thessalonians 5:15, which is not in your sheet, says, "See that no one repays another with evil for evil, but always seek after that which is good for one another." That's the word, seek after. Paul writes to Timothy, same author as we're reading here in Romans, "Flee from these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness." Same word, pursue. So what is Paul saying? He's saying, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Pursue hospitality. Not just because it's necessary in the moment, that's fine, but actually go after it. This is an active seeking for something. It is not a nice to have. It's not a helpful suggestion. It is a command from God. Do this thing, and don't just do it when you have to. Make opportunity to do it. Let's look at a few more passages. Let's hear from a different apostle, the Apostle Peter. Look at 1 Peter 4:8-10. "Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling." You may be beginning to see a pattern here. When they say love one another, hospitality shows up. Hospitality is a way of showing love to one another. It's a unique way of doing it. There's another great word here in 1 Peter 4. He says, "Above all, keep loving one another earnestly." That word earnestly means to stretch tight. It's the idea of straining your muscles to do something. It's only used one other place, and it actually has to do with Peter. In Acts, we read, "So Peter was kept in prison. He was about to be executed. But the church was earnestly praying to God for him." Now, how would you pray if the leader of your church was on death row and was to be executed tomorrow? That's earnest prayer. That's how the church of Jerusalem was praying. And that's the way Peter says that we're to love one another. And how do we do it? Peter says, show hospitality to one another. That one another is important. He's writing to the whole church. Now, I mentioned earlier, and we'll look at a passage where it says elders aren't really qualified to be elders unless this is a habit of theirs. But that's far different from saying this is the duty of an elder than not the other church members. This is, according to Peter, something we are all to do to one another. Now, there's other kinds of hospitality, outreach to the lost, which is a separate topic and a really important one. But today we're looking at God talking to his own people, to the family of God, and saying, this is how you're to show love to one another. It's not the only way, but it's a really big way. And he says, to do it without grumbling. Now, if you have ever had to give up an evening to have someone over and killed yourself making six courses and cleaning the house like it hasn't been cleaned in the last 6 years, then you know the feeling of grumbling about showing hospitality. And Peter says, that's not how it's supposed to be. And we're going to talk a little more about that later, because it's not supposed to be like that. It shouldn't be something that leads you to grumbling. It should be something, well, that leads you to love. I mean, it'd be kind of like saying, give hugs without grumbling. That's the way we're to practice hospitality. It's not something we do like, oh, gosh, I got to do this again. I hate this. Not like that. Like, this is something you're giving to a brother or sister in the church. It's something that you're giving to the church. More than that, we'll see it's something you're giving to Jesus himself. In fact, let's move on to the next passage. Hebrews 13, 1 through 2. Let love of the brethren continue. That means sustain it. Don't let it die out. There's a translation of this, more of a paraphrase. It says, don't let your love for the brethren grow cold. That's a good capturing of the idea. Keep it going. Stoke the fire. Again, we start with love, and then where does he go? Do not neglect to show hospitality, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. Now, I left out there two strangers, because there isn't any words there that says two strangers. Remember what I told you? The literal translation of this word, hospitality, means to love strangers. So the translators chose to put that idea here, but it's still just that one word. It's the same word, hospitality. And I think maybe it was because, you know, some have entertained angels without knowing it, and so they're thinking, oh, that was Lot's story, and he was entertaining strangers, and so they added strangers. But look at the context. Let love of the brethren continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality. Just like in these other passages. How do you show your love for your brothers and sisters? Show it to them through hospitality. Don't neglect it. It's a warning. Why do we get a warning like that? Because it's easy to neglect. If it was natural and common and came easily to everybody, we wouldn't need a warning like this. Look at the next one, and we will look at here. We've seen the commands, and we see the reasoning. This is needed to show love, to preserve love, to build up love. Think of stoking a fire. But how did the early church interpret this? Well, we don't have to guess, because we have it recorded. So look at 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 3. It is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. You could go to Titus 1:8, read a very similar list, and while the lists are not identical, they both say hospitable. How can you be an example for the church, Paul is thinking, if you're not hospitable? If this is such a key thing to letting the love of the brethren continue and earnestly loving one another and devotedly loving one another, then the people who are leading you and giving you an example, they have to be good at this. They have to do it. Or how can they be an example? You notice it's right there beside able to teach. In fact, it's before able to teach. Now, the order doesn't necessarily mean an order of importance, but it's fair to say this is also a requirement. Your elder can't be pugnacious with a chip on his shoulder, always willing to take offense and start a fight or an argument. But he also has to be hospitable. This is important. It was so important that it was specifically called out as something that had to be exampled by the elders. But it is an example, not a role. Peter's clear. We are to love one another, to show hospitality to one another. It is not the role of the elders or any other particular person in the church. Look at the next one. 1 Timothy 5, 9 through 10. I referenced this earlier. A widow is to be put on the list. This is the list of people the church is supporting. only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one man, having a reputation for good works, and if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work. These are the good works of the church. They are the things that build up the church. And then finally, looking at the early church, the very, very early church, in Acts chapter 2, when Luke writes about the church right after the day of Pentecost, this is how he describes them. Acts 2, 46 through 47. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. What a picture of the church. They were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart. Remember what I was saying about how hard it is to really let somebody know you in a few hours on Sunday morning? It's not just that we're trying to be hypocritical. It's just that it's not a very conducive forum for that sort of thing. It's a one-on-one thing when you really get to know somebody. And there's something about talking over a meal that I can't explain, but I just know that from ancient times, back in Abraham's day, that to sit down and have a meal together was a big deal. And in fact, if you look at all the covenants, all the way up to the New Covenant, they all began with a meal between the two parties. That's what the Lord's Supper is. He established it over a meal. Moses and the elders ascended onto Sinai, 70 elders and Moses, and it says they had a meal with God. What does that even look like? I don't know. But that's how the covenant was inaugurated then. It's how our covenant was inaugurated. There is something powerful about having a meal together. And in what we just read in Revelation about the church and the bride being united, and then what happens? A wedding feast. A meal. Jesus even said at the Last Supper that he was looking forward to the next supper. I'm not going to drink this cup again until I drink it with you in heaven. Something about having a meal together as believers is special. You don't really have to understand why. Just that it is, and that's why God has told us to do it. It's not some arbitrary command. It's because he wants good gifts for us. He wants us to grow closer together. If it doesn't seem like a good gift to you, just trust that it is a good gift. Taste and see, as the psalmist said. One last thing. In 1 Corinthians 5, this is a different kind of passage. This is a church discipline passage. And I want you to read about what the harshest form of church discipline was in this passage. 1 Corinthians 5, 9 through 13. I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people, not at all meaning the sexually immoral of this world, or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. But now I am writing to you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of a brother, if he is guilty of sexual immorality or greed or is an idolater, reviler, drunkard, or swindler, not even to eat with such a one. He's saying, if you want to bring a brother back into the fold, you need to let him know how serious his sin is. And how do you do that? You cut out fellowship. Even fellowship over the table. You see what's implied here? He's saying that this is like the worst thing you could do to a brother in the church, to show him his need for the body and his need to return to Christ. Don't even share a meal with him. And yet, this is the normal thing we do to one another in the church. I mean, we have meals here, yes, but that's not what this is talking about. This is talking about don't have him over for supper. There was a joke when I was a kid that if the pastor doesn't preach right, you cut out his fried chicken. Well, that's kind of biblical. You don't even eat with a brother who is rejecting Christ and defaming the name of God, because that is the worst thing you can do, the thing that most shows them their need for the people of God. And yet it's become normal in our churches and abnormal to actually share a meal together in our homes with one another. So then, what do we do differently? Well, the good news is this is not complicated. And I put a little acrostic at the bottom of your sheet. Not something I normally do, and it's not a very good one, but here you go. Can you do hospitality? Yes, you can make it. That's my acrostic. Make it. All right, we'll go through the pieces. Consider this an introduction. If you feel totally lost when all this is over, and yet are convinced, as I hope, by God Himself, that this is something that will change your life and the life of the church and the life of those in the church, then ask somebody for help who's got more experience doing this. My wife is available. Diana is available. Both have a lot of experience doing this. And everybody does it differently, but it doesn't have to be complex. So we'll start with M and make it. Make it regular. Make it regular. What does that mean? It means you plan for it. There are things in our lives that are regular. The fact that we're all sitting here at this time on a Sunday morning is evidence that we are capable of making something regular. If we can make this gathering regular, we can make a gathering for hospitality regular. I'm not saying it has to be every week. I'm just saying it needs to be every something. Not every eon or every era. Not every stage of life. It should be frequent. I mean, think about how it was described in the early church. And do you realize that for hundreds of years, the early church met in homes? That means that in order to have church, somebody had to show hospitality. That, I think, is one of the reasons it was in the requirements for elders. You couldn't very well host a church in your house if you couldn't host anybody in your house. It was key to them, and it was a regular. It was the birthmark of the church. It's what they did all the time. Do we need to do it every day? No, we don't. But we need to do it on some kind of regular frequency. And as I said earlier, if everybody in this church did this once a month, just had a family, a person over from the church to your home for a meal, I think it would absolutely transform our fellowship. And you would find friendships that you never found before, even though you've known people for years. In fact, I'll just tell you this by way of example. There is a couple, members of this church. You probably heard about them in prayer requests. You might have talked to them and seen them, but many of you haven't. It's Bill and Mary Sherrard. I know them better than I know quite a few of you. Even though they haven't attended here but once a year maybe in the last 4 years because their health keeps them at home. Why do I know them so well? Well, they actually got sick and quit coming to church about 2 weeks after we joined this church 6 years ago. By all rights, I should know them practically none at all other than their names and from prayer requests. But the reason I know them really, really well is that about once every month or every 2 months, my family and I go over there and we sit in their living room and we sit around and talk together. And they host us in their house. And because of those conversations, we have a friendship that has developed that could never have developed here on Sunday morning, and that has, in many ways, developed farther than those of people I see every week, just because of sitting down in someone's living room and talking together. So make it regular. Number two, ask. Ask what? Ask who? First, ask God. Especially if this intimidates you or overwhelms you to think about it. Ask for God's help and blessing. Remember Greg taught us, or maybe it was Matt, I think it was Matt. Blessing is God making you fruitful. So ask that God would make this fruitful, that He would help you to do it and that He would make it fruitful. Pray as a family every single time you're about to have somebody over. Ask for God's blessing on it. Also, ask your guests real questions. It is possible to have a meal with someone and never get beyond the weather. Don't do that. Remember, I said once, you know, if a garden club gets together, you know what they talk about? Gardening. Been there, seen it. If a paper stamping club or a quilting club gets together, they talk about a whole lot of things. But they will talk about stamping and quilting. But the weird thing about Christians is that often we get together and the only real relationship we have is that we're part of the family of God. And yet that's not often a topic of our conversation. Or I guess it's fair to say it's so often not a topic. And it should be. So just ask a real question. How did you and your wife, how did you get to be married? You know, how did God lead you in that? How did you end up where you're at? How did you become a believer? These are simple questions, but it may be one question is all you need for the whole meal, because then everybody can share. It doesn't have to be complex. It just needs to be real. Find out something about people. Show some curiosity. Ask them good questions. Okay, that's M and A. We'll go to K. This one is possibly the most important one. Keep it simple. I'm going to read you a quote from a book on hospitality, Christian hospitality, called Open Hearts, Open Homes by a woman named Karen Maines. I've actually met her. Secular entertaining is a terrible bondage. Its source is human pride. Demanding perfection, fostering the urge to impress, it is a rigorous taskmaster which enslaves. In contrast, scriptural hospitality is a freedom which liberates. Hospitality seeks to minister. It says, "This home is not mine. It is truly a gift from my master. I am his servant, and I use it as he desires." Hospitality does not try to impress, but to serve. Entertaining is not the same thing as Christian hospitality. The object is not to make your home or your table or your cooking impressive. The object is to spend time with one another over a meal. And if for you, that means you go to the store and you buy 5 boxes of macaroni and cheese and a couple cans of green beans and slap it down on the table, cook it first. It does need to be edible. That's good enough. Simple and regular is 100 times better than elaborate and extraordinarily rare. If you feel exhausted from the preparation for hospitality, try it differently. Now, it is work. It will cost you. It'll cost you a little bit of money. It'll cost you some time. It'll cost you your privacy. It'll cost you maybe some frayed nerves if this is new to you. But it's worth it. But it doesn't have to be complex or fancy. Proverbs 15:17 says, "Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened calf served with hatred." If love is there, you will have exercised hospitality. No matter how beautiful and fancy and spectacular it is, if there is no love, you will have not actually exercised Christian hospitality, no matter how many people you have through your home to be impressed by whatever. You're there to serve them and to show them love. What we do in our family is we just serve the same thing we serve our family. We just throw another rock or two in the soup. Or another pan of lasagna in there. Whatever it is you make, we don't try to come up with something special. We just increase the volume per the number of people coming, and that's it. That's good enough. Let's sit down and eat like we're family. How do you cook for your family? Remember, what you're doing here is cooking for your family. Not for the president, for your family. So treat it as if you're cooking a meal and your family just doubled in size tonight. That's good enough. So, make it regular. Ask God and ask your guests about themselves. Keep it simple. And E, extend it to everyone in the church. I've heard young singles say, "Well, I can only have young singles over. It's not like I could have a whole family over. I only have 2 folding chairs, and there's no way I could entertain them." No, 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 no. You need all the relationships in the church, and they all need you. If you have to borrow card tables and folding chairs, great. Or sit on the porch, fine. If you're If you're inviting over a family of eight, just cook a lot of spaghetti. Spaghetti, you can feed an army with spaghetti for less than $10. Maybe not, but close. We've sat them on the floor, we've sat them on the furniture, we get a card table out, we extend it, we cram people in. That's good. It's good to literally rub shoulders sometimes and be crammed around one table, just like you're a big family around a table. It doesn't have to be pretty. And it doesn't have to be someone you're like, oh yeah, they're a family, we're a family, we can do this. Or they're old, I'm old, we can do this. No, have over the old, have over the young, have over the families, have over the singles. Extend your hospitality to everyone in the church, because every part of the body needs every other part of the body. And the closer we're connected with those parts, the more we will work as Christ intended us to and build up the body. And you will have a ton of fun. Dwight can tell some amazing stories. You need to have him over and just get him to tell you some stories. Like the first time he ever saw electricity, which is what he told me this morning. That's just awesome. So meet some people in the church and learn about what they can tell you. Okay, everyone, we're almost there. I involve the whole family. Now, for some of you, that's just you, and that's fine. But for those of you that have a whole family, this is not something where you need to get a babysitter and send your kids away so that you can properly entertain your guests. You can involve them. Even a three-year-old can help set the table, even if you have to do it again afterwards. They can fold napkins. Our kids used to color placemats. Give them a sheet of paper and a marker and a smock and let them color a placemat and put it in each person's place. Find some way to involve the kids at whatever level, whether they're teenagers or three-year-olds. And when you pray beforehand, pray with the kids so that they know what this is about. Ask God for what you're really trying to accomplish. And then afterwards, you can say, did you see what God did? Did you see how that worked out? Wasn't that awesome? Use your whole family to do this, because they all need to learn to show hospitality too. And if it looks like this incredibly distant, complicated thing that only mom knows how to do, I mean, I had a lot of friends my age when I was in college was like, oh yeah, mom throws these parties. I could never do anything like that. Don't make it like that. Make your kids think, I could do this too. In fact, I am doing it, even as I'm growing up. So involve the whole family. And finally, T, trust God to make it fruitful. You do not need to be Martha Stewart. Even if you were, and perhaps especially if you were, it wouldn't be fruitful. If it is you and you alone, it will not be fruitful. Trust God to make it fruitful. Ask Him and then trust Him to actually do it. With all your mistakes and the goofy things that happen, and maybe you burn something, or maybe it rains, and maybe they track mud in your house. Who knows? Who cares? This is something that is critical to the life of the church. It isn't free. It is costly. But trust God that it will be worth it, and He'll make it rewarding. And not just for you, and not just for your guests, but for the whole church. Maybe even for others. Look back at your verse sheet. There's not necessarily a direct connection here, but look at that passage in Acts. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. Hospitality as outreach is a whole other topic, but I can tell you that if this is the way we treated each other regularly, that will stand out in the world. That is unusual. And that will grant you favor, because if nothing else, we love one another. And what are we inviting people into when we invite them into the family of God? If it's just a gathering, there are plenty of other gatherings. But it's not. It's the family of God. It is the preparation for the marriage supper of the Lamb. And we illustrate all of that when we have each other over in our homes. So make it regular. Ask for God's help and blessing. Keep it simple. Extend it to everyone in the church. involve the whole family, and then trust God to take all of those things and make it work and make it rewarding. The last passage on your sheet is Matthew 10, 39 through 42. And it's about reward. He who has found his life will lose it, and he who has lost his life for my sake will find it. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. So can you have God over for dinner? Yes, you can. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cold cup of water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. That pan of mac and cheese will have a reward if it is given with love to those that are of Christ's family. There is a reward. It's worth what it costs in the future and now. I'm going to read you a quote and we'll close. It's a quote from a book named Alexander Strock. I don't know how to say his last name. It's called The Hospitality Commands. And much of what I've been sharing with you was inspired after reading that book. It's just a little book. But this is what he says about what would happen if the church does this. We would all agree that love should permeate our individual lives as well as the life of the local church. But how, in practical, down-to-earth terms, do we show more genuine Christian love and community? One clear answer is hospitality. Hospitality fleshes out love in a uniquely personal and sacrificial way. Through the ministry of hospitality, we share our most prized possessions. We share our family, home, finances, food, privacy, and time. So hospitality is always costly. Through the ministry of hospitality, we provide friendship, acceptance, fellowship, refreshment, comfort, and love in one of the richest and deepest ways possible for humans to understand. Unless we open the doors of our homes to one another, the reality of the local church as a close-knit family of loving brothers and sisters is only a theory. Let's pray together.